Hello, everyone. My name is Devin Rue. I'm a professional fantasy cartographer and illustrator in the tabletop RPG industry, as well as your host for the Quip and Quill podcast.
First off, thank you for having me on. My name is Josh Ketchin. I am an illustrator. I kind of go by the name, the moniker of Creative Outpouring. It's kind of my company, if you will. I am an illustrator. I primarily do fantasy art in TTRPGs, and I also do posters for like YouTubers and movies and stuff like that. But I also make tabletop games. That's occasionally what I do as well.
Nice. So you make posters for movies? Like what movies?
Well, like I've made a couple for like some small like independent ones that never came to fruition. Made one for a small indie animated film. It was called like Western Space Odyssey or something like that. I made a poster for. That was a fun project. But I primarily do posters for a lot of YouTubers. Like I've done Scott the Waz. I do a lot of posters for him. Ryan George. Up Is Not Jump. God, I feel like I'm just name dropping here, and I
don't need to. How are we supposed to know who you are if you're not name dropping?
That's true. So primarily those. There's been a few others outside of that, but those are the more consistent ones that I do posters for.
Right. And when you say that you write for RPGs, are you making supplements, modules, entire games, campaigns?
Oh, sorry,
what
I do.
Are you writing?
I do artwork for TTRPGs. Okay. I've done artwork for Paizo, for Starfinder.
Nice.
I've done artwork for Ghostfire Gaming. I've done a couple pieces for them. I've done some artwork for small indie modules here and there. I also do artwork for actual play streaming shows. D4 RPG. Yeah. I did the character art for them a lot. Children of Erte. I do the character art for them as well.
Nice.
Their characters are a lot of fun to paint for sure. And that's like all I can really think of off the top of my head. But I do, I think what I meant to say earlier was I write my own tabletop games. I've been working on a couple tabletop games. One is a co-optional adventure game called Pages of Fate, which is like a deck building co-op adventure game with some RPG elements. I'm also working on a racing game where you play as wizards and you just basically cast spells at each other. It's called Rune Rally.
Okay.
And I'm working on another one's really early on. It's called Cartography Quest, which is essentially you play as a cartographer and you plot out the most efficient routes to where treasure is. But the other players try to hinder those routes and make them longer or harder. And that affects your treasure that you help the adventurers find.
Nice.
It's been a lot of fun to kind of work on these things. It's fun to kind of make a problem and solve it with mechanics and stuff. And it's been a lot of fun to make systems. And I really enjoy making games. And I hope that's something that I can just do more often. I really enjoy it.
Hold on a second. I'm getting I'll fix that. Okay. Just making sure. I thought my mic was not going to work for me for a second.
You're all right.
Yep. Okay. my
Sounding
internet
good?
Flickered and I was like, wait a minute.
Man, that's like you're in like the holding pattern. Yeah, no, I get it. It's rough.
Especially now, because you know, I now have a podcast, which is just weird, but it's really just my excuse to sit down and talk to people that I normally don't have an opportunity or reason to. Like, I don't know. Especially as an adult, it's really weird to make friends. So now I just invite them on my podcast.
Pod pals.
Oh, I should have named it that. That would have been perfect.
That's what you can call it. Yeah, so you can call your friends that are on the pod their pod pals.
Right.
But I feel like 3 years ago that would have had a totally different definition.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, still accurate though.
Yeah, it's still accurate for sure. Yeah, no, so do you find with the podcast, do you find that like you're getting more used to it as you go, or do you still feel like there's some nerves a little bit at the beginning of it?
I was never nervous.
Never nervous to begin with. Wow. No. Amazing.
I make the joke all the time that I have enough confidence to like for an entire village of people. I don't ever fear failing, because it, to me, it's just part of the learning process. So when I do stuff like this, I'm like, if it works, great. If it doesn't, oh well, you know, it was a learning experience and I just move on.
Well, you brought the right guest then. I am the other side of that coin.
Most people are. So,
well, not necessarily more of a fear of failure. It's more of like a, like, I want to make sure that I, when I leave this world, I leave something behind that, like, at least matters to me, you know?
Well, the podcast isn't it for me. Like,
well, no.
That sounds rude. I don't mean it like that.
No, this is like,
I care about you all deeply. What I mean, though, is like, this is for fun. If it gets stressful, I'll stop.
Yeah, for sure. It's good to know when to take a break, though. It's like you can't make something like your everything always, no matter how passionate you are about it, for sure.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's one of the reasons why I did have it weekly last year, and I'm like, I cannot keep up with that pace.
Mm-hmm.
I have way too much stuff going on and way too many projects that I want to do. And now that I actually have more of a schedule than I've ever had in years, I'm now moving this to actually whenever I get done editing.
Yeah.
So, it's just a whenever.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that's okay. I especially since you're kind of just like running it through the Patreon.
Yeah.
I mean, I think people are supporting it just because they love the idea. And I think whenever that means they support you as well. So I think they're probably all for, you know, whenever you do it. I mean, I don't know. They could all turn on you in a second.
All three of them could be like, fuck you, fuck this, I'm out of here.
Yeah, that's how I feel my Patreon too. My Patreon has a small but very loving community right now. Right. And but I'm just like, I keep saying to myself, like, I think I'm just gonna like do this one thing, and I'm like, I can't wait for them to all turn with their pitchforks.
Right.
And
well, most people that join anyone's Patreon, it depends on the type of art that you do, but most people that join an artist who does illustrations, or in my particular case, really detailed maps, I think a lot of people are joining because they want to support your art. There are, of course, Patreons where it's like, I am here specifically so I can download a bunch of stuff. But thankfully enough, that's not the majority of people who at least support me. This podcast has its own Patreon.
Yeah.
Anyone wants to look it up. It's Q&Q podcast on Patreon. Because I don't make any money off of this. I actually am doing it because I want to help people that are coming into the industry, or are already here for that matter, but not quite where they want to be.
Mm-hmm.
And to kind of hear all of our stories, get to know us better, maybe become patrons of ours.
Sure.
You know, learn how to navigate this very, very weird industry.
It's a weird industry, but it's also like just weird in general, like the world. Like in terms of having like a craft or a thing that you are trying to monetize in any way.
Right.
It's just a really weird way to it's so hard to navigate things now. The waters have gotten so muddy, I feel like, with social media and Patreon and all that stuff. And
I think it depends on what you are creating.
For sure.
So like a perfect example of this is I get asked a lot, you know, like, oh, I have a, you know, I want to start a Patreon. I don't know what to do with it. And I hear all the time, oh, I can't keep up with like a monthly new project along with all the other stuff I'm doing. And I'm like, why are you doing new projects every month?
Yeah.
You know, and then we start talking about how like Patreon, it should be like getting access to archives or seeing part of the process. Like we actually discuss like what Patreon should be. And it ends up changing a lot of people's viewpoint of it and entirely revamping their Patreon. And it works so much better. And it's a lot less stressful.
Yeah, it's like a behind the curtain.
Yes.
Kind of thing. Yeah.
Because of the way that Patreon is set up, especially the way that it advertises, it does make it sound like, oh, people are paying for you to produce new stuff every month. That is not, depending on what you do, that is not the case. It's not in my case. You're paying for my archives of my art.
Yeah. I think having a clear... And this was something that I struggled with at the beginning of the, my Patreon's only a year old, so it's like it's still pretty new. But like, it's something I kind of struggled with at the beginning was like having a clear, focused understanding of what it is I want the Patreon to be.
Right.
Like I feel like I knew what I wanted it to be, but then I was worried that it wasn't like fruitful enough to like entice people to join it. So I just kept adding other stuff. And then now I'm scaling it back again and being like, no, this is just, if you're interested in the games I'm making and you want to see how I make it, like, this is where you go. Right. And that's kind of where I'm going to dial it back a little bit, too. And I also want to make stuff for, like, people's own TTRPGs and stuff that they can, you know, use in their games if they want to use them and stuff. I think I might do something like that.
Yeah.
More focused on tabletop games.
I encourage people to create a community first and then worry about Patreon afterwards.
For sure.
Because I think the hard thing about being monetizing your art is figuring out how to not only create it on a regular basis and something that people will actually buy, but also trying to figure out how to, when you do start getting projects with other people, how do you show work in progress and or look like you're doing something while you have other stuff under NDA and not feel like you're spending every waking moment working on art that you can't show.
Yeah.
And I think that we have this idea that we have to immediately monetize our art, and then the second we have the opportunity, we're going to quit that day job and we're going to be full-time and work on, you know, sustain ourselves through Patreon and blah blah blah, and that doesn't work that way.
For sure. You know? Yeah, no, I kind of went into Patreon with the idea of like I already make a decent, I'm comfortable enough with the living that I have. Patreon's more just for personal projects and helping kind of not only motivate myself but like keep everything in some semblance of organization, as well as use it as like almost like a blog in a way, or like a central hub for those projects, just because I feel like with social media, at least with me, it feels too distracting and daunting and anxiety inducing, and no matter what I do with it, I still feel like it doesn't feel like a good fit for me. Social media.
Patreon or social
media? Social media. Like Patreon feels much more my speed. It feels more like I can use it as like a little blog or like a journal or a dev diary or whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. And if people like it, great. If people don't, that's fine. They can move on. And social media is more just kind of like, here's a piece of art I made. Bye. And then like, that's it. Just because I don't think I'm ever going to be more open than that on social media. In conversation with people, I'm much more open, but I don't really put myself completely out there and vulnerable on social media just because I find it really hard for me to access that in terms of communicating it through those spheres. That's why Instagram is so hard for me.
Like, well, I mean, that's what Patreon is fantastic for. And when I mean like build a community first and then worry about everything you're doing on Patreon, like you can build your community on Patreon. You know, it's that's actually how I built mine. And then I got to, you know, started Discord and everything else. And my, you know, I go on social media. I make a post. I barely get to read anyone else's posts unless I just happen to be scrolling through because I'm waiting on something else. But otherwise, I'm barely on social media as far as interacting goes. Because I do so much on Discord. I have, I share tons of pictures of my cats and my personal life and, you know, and tell everyone, like, it's ridiculous. I write things like good morning and I tell them dumb stuff I'm doing throughout the day and just, you know, way too much information that I'm sure they're like, God damn, give it a rest, Evan, you know? But I have an amazing community. Like I make the joke all the time, but it's very true. Although I have moderators, I don't know why, because basically, like, I have such a great community that the only time that we ever have to do anything is when we get the occasional spammer that joins and tries to, I don't know, make us get 1,000 followers in an hour or some crazy ass shit.
Yeah, and that's how I feel about streaming. Like when I stream on Twitch, I usually stream painting on Twitch on like Monday, Thursday, and Fridays, and I usually find the community on there pretty supportive, and it's again small, still growing, but as of right now, everyone's pretty supportive and kind and really great, except for the occasional spam. Right. Grow your followers nonsense that I immediately ban. But yeah, I haven't really had any issues in terms of that as well. I'm really grateful for that. I think the small consistent supporters have been really awesome and really great and motivating enough to keep going with it. Right. And I'm not it's weird. I'm not expecting or even hoping to like be, you know, a popular top tier artist. I just want to make art and hope people like it. To be honest with you, that's all I really want to do. And if people dig it, they can keep checking it out and stuff. But yeah, no, I like to just make art for people, and if they want to hire me for projects, that's great. And if not, and that's cool too. I'm just going to keep doing my thing. Sure.
All the top tier people I know feel the same fucking way.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. The majority of people, I don't think that. So I think it's funny. We were talking about AI before we started recording. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons that I think that it has taken off so much is because there's a lot of people out there who don't have the time or the ability to either learn how to paint or draw or whatever, or maybe they just feel like they can't, there's no way they can. But it is very appealing to be considered an artist because you're creating something with just your imagination, or, you know, there is something that's almost magical or mystical about it, so to speak. And I think a lot of people really, really want that. But I can't imagine anyone getting into this just for the money, because there isn't any in that regard. Even as a traditional artist, where at one point I sold paintings for easily $5,000 and up, at best you have a show and you sell 5 paintings, and that's a great show. You know, and that's not enough to make it throughout the year. And that's still considered, like I said, that's a great show.
Yeah. You know,
and I think that a lot of people just want to, I think most of us just want to create and have fun with it and hope that we can make a living doing it, so we can just keep creating and having fun with it.
Yeah, for sure. I always feel like that people have a certain idea of what they hope to create and put out in the world, and they hope that people enjoy it just as much as they do.
Right. I don't know. So, yeah, we all seem to be floundering out here in the sea going, I don't know what the fuck to do.
Yeah. It feels like we're just guessing constantly. Yeah.
No, I think what I was trying to say is that we end up with, as I'm doing these wonderful episodes, you know, and talking to everyone, I will always hear things like, oh, you know, if only I did the more popular stuff, if I drew something cute, or if I drew something scary, or if I painted, or if I did black and white. Like, we all have this concept of these people are making more money. Look at all this stuff that sells, all this stuff that they can create, or all these popular, you know, people or whatever. And the problem that we have with that is, one, sometimes it's circumstance. It's sheer circumstance that someone came across a fairly unique idea and they were one of the first people on it. And that's what got them this unique following. But also it's things like, oh, I made a really funny reference. I have all of these Buffy the Vampire Slayer fans and now they follow me because I made this funny meme and then we turned it into a t-shirt. Mm-hmm. Now it's a running joke. Then it turned into a novel. Now we're going to make a movie out of it. Like, you know, Twilight.
Well, it kind of happened like that with making, when I started making like Critical Role fan art.
Right.
Like I did a couple pieces for that just because I was like, man, I really like Jester. She's super cool. Right. And I was like, I'm just going to make some paintings of these because I need to practice painting and I got to do it somehow. And people seem to really dig it. And that kind of started generating commissions because that was around the same time I opened up commission slots for character pieces. And that's kind of what got the ball rolling. Like fan art kind of got the ball rolling on that anyway, but it was more in line with what I was intending on doing anyway. It's just, it was a fan art piece instead. So I definitely think fan art has I feel like a lot of people give fan art such a bad rap in a way. Like, I feel like there's been always this debate online of like fan art versus original ideas. And right. I kind of feel like you can just do both. And I think that's okay. Yeah. And I feel like people gotta kind of get off their high horses on either side. I think
it depends though. Like a perfect example of this is whoever does the character portraits for Critical Role, that campaign, right?
Yeah.
In order for you to make fan art of Jester, you have to use this artist's original pieces to know what they look like.
For sure. Yeah.
So there's a lot of times where it's like, we don't give a lot of credit to the original artist. We don't even say like it's inspired by. And when it comes to the person who's getting a ton of fan art made of their original art, it's like, okay, that's great. But like, you know, someone just made, you know, X amount of dollars, you know, a ridiculous amount of money on something that they drew based off of my work. And I don't even get like an acknowledgement. Like, so,
yeah,
that's the problem that people have with fan art is.
See, what I usually hear is people just don't like the idea of fan art just because it's not their original idea. Like,
yeah, well,
that's usually the debate.
Themselves.
Yeah, that's usually the debate I hear. It's incredibly close-minded. And it's like, okay, that's like saying any band after the Beatles is bad.
Right.
It's like, what are you talking about? Like, there's so many bands that, in my opinion, are better than the Beatles.
Oh,
and that's okay.
Oh, no, careful. No, just kidding.
And you know what? Fine. If people are going to hate me for that, that's totally fine. I get it. You like the Beatles. It's fine. George Harrison was the best Beatle and his solo albums better than all theirs. No. But anyways.
Oh, no. Shots fired.
All Things Must Pass is the best Beatles album. And it's not even a Beatles album. Yeah. I think there's definitely a place for both. And I think fan art is a lot of fun to do. And it's just your way of showing love for the character or even doing. Another thing that I love is when people do draw this in your own style challenges on social media. I love that shit. Because it's like, it's such a fun way to be like, hey man, like this character you make is sick. Like, and this is my interpretation of it. Like, thanks for doing this cool thing. So, I think fan art has has an incredibly valuable role in like the art world. And I'm just surprised whenever I see like the hot takes about fan art versus original stuff.
I mean, I'm old. I just turned 50.
Woo-hoo. Happy birthday, by the
Thank
way.
Thank you. I remember the birthing of the internet. I'm that old. One of the things that absolutely cracked me up is when artists started moving over to digital tools.
Yeah.
To constantly hear, you're not a real artist because, yeah, you know, fuck you. They're making art. They're artists. Like, just because, and I love this. I had a debate with somebody one time and they're like, yeah, but there's no way to make happy little mistakes. So yes, there is. It doesn't make the art for you.
I have some terrible news for that person. Have you ever accidentally merged everything onto one layer? That's right? A happy little mistake.
Well, I think that they mean like the odd things that you paint and then you realize, oh, that's
painted a tree. Like, right. Yeah, I get
and
what
that, like, oh, that's perfect there. And then you leave it. And I was like, yeah, no, you still fucking do that.
Yeah, no, I do
that
all the time.
It's too easy to erase.
My favorite.
Do you not have an eraser in your pencil?
If my favorite thing to do, and I talk about my process a lot on stream, is like I zoom out and you just kind of make big blobby shapes.
Right.
And as you do, like, you're starting to kind of see form, and which is like a fundamental art thing, traditional or non, like that is just what it is. But like, that's kind of how you almost get those happy mistakes, is just you're seeing form happen. And sometimes those forms like make really cool, interesting ideas that you end up leaning into. Yeah. Like a perfect example would be like if you're doing a landscape and you're starting off with just a blank color on a canvas and you just start splotching in like a darker color to make just land masses everywhere, and you somehow accidentally form like a crag in a mountain, and you're like, that looks like a cool rock texture, so I'm gonna leave that, and then I'm gonna try to replicate it in other spots. Like, it happens a ton.
Well, now that debate is finally like dying down, which makes me so fucking happy.
Unless you go to my dentist about a month ago, and where they're like, so you're a digital artist. Yeah. I'm a digital artist. Sorry, hold on. I'm at the dentist. I'm a digital artist. Because I have all this stuff in my mouth and they're asking me questions for some reason. And then they take all that stuff out. So I describe to them what I do, and then they immediately are just kind of like, so you just like click a couple buttons and it's done? I'm like,
oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like,
absolutely.
I mean,
that's what we do.
By click a couple buttons, you mean work on something for hours on end, then I guess. Yeah, sure. Do you mean control S to save the file every 10 minutes to make sure I don't destroy
10
my
minutes.
File?
I'm every fucking 15 seconds at best. I'm so
Can't
terrified.
I'm going to go into another little micro tangent here. I learned my lesson to save often and save backups, because one time I had like, I want to say it was maybe 2 years worth of work on this flash drive. Because at the time I was very mobile with my work. I was going everywhere. I just was bringing a laptop everywhere I went. I'm sitting on the couch next to my wife. I have the flash drive in my tablet. I'm working on this piece I've been working on for like a month. Mm-hmm. And I'm about to finish it. I feel like in maybe another 2 hours I'd finish it. She comes to sit down next to me and she sits on the flash drive. And the thing snaps. I lost 2 years worth of work.
Oh.
And I was like, I was like, what have you done?
Hello, fellow artists. I highly recommend Backblaze.
Yeah, thank you. This podcast is sponsored by Backblaze.
Not yet, but hey, Backblaze, if you're listening, I could do with another sponsor. That's how I got Legend Keeper. So yes.
Sick. No, this, it's sponsored by Backblaze. Yeah. Please sponsor us. I from then on, yeah, I definitely I have a network drive that I back everything up on. And yeah, it, never again. But it was pretty brutal. I was just like, oh my god. But you know, I ended up doing the piece again and I ended up liking it more, so whatever.
Right.
But it was just
Well, digital artists. We have that now because I realized I shouldn't have said that that argument is dying, because the amount of people that I will see hand-drawn maps or hand-drawn whatever, and I'm like, how else would you draw them if not by your hands?
By lasers from your eyes.
Right. That's why when someone's like, oh, do you hand draw your maps? Well, I don't draw with my... I try drawing with my toes. Not only is this just really an awkward position with my tablet, but it oddly enough, just doesn't look as good.
I mean, you tried drawing them with your mind, but as you focused way too hard and you got a nosebleed and you passed it on the paper, you then realized maybe I should use my hands.
I
always think they're more, when they talk about hand-drawn stuff on social media, it has this, it almost feels like it's more just this weird marketability kind of thing. It has this weird vibe to it, there it's like, if people see that it's hand-drawn, it looks more enticing to them or whatever. But
see, I advertise stupid. Hand-drawn because that's the style of my art. Like, it looks very, very drawn. Like, it's not...
It's illustrated, yeah.
Right.
You did it with your hands.
That's weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah. Well, because as a partially blind person, and I use a lot of the alt text, there's a tremendous difference when someone's like a... You know, when they describe the way a map looks... If it's written like it's hand drawn, then I know it's not like perfectly straight lines, or I mean, even though you can do that with a ruler, it's obviously meant to emphasize like it's not, it definitely looks drawn, not computer made.
It has natural flaws. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's one of the reasons why I use it, because it's much easier that way.
Yeah.
Although I recently found out that a lot of my social media's alt text hasn't been going through.
Oh, no.
Because the software I use for some reason decided to reset itself.
I've been trying to make sure I do alt text in my images. I've been really bad at that, and I apologize. Anyone that uses alt text, I'm very bad at it. I got to get better at it.
I think most of the people I know, unless they are trying to start an argument on the internet, most of us like fully understand. Like it. I don't know another blind person who doesn't know it probably takes somebody more time to type out what the image looks like or whatever. So
yeah,
I think that we have a little bit more grace, you know, with it. The only problem that we have is that when it's something that it's important, you know, like everything that the government puts out should have alt text on it.
Yeah, for sure.
Everything the school puts out should have alt text on it. Anything science-based, anything where we would be able to,
important
to
information.
Gather knowledge,
yeah.
absolutely should have alt text with it. The fact that it doesn't pisses me off.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. Yeah, the issue with me is like sometimes I end up getting too descriptive. I did one. Well, no, I made the mistake of like forgetting. I almost forgot where I was, and I just like almost like turned it into like a prompt from like an art director or something. Uh-huh. Like I was like, the four adventurers fighting this giant crocodile monster in a bog, and it ends up just not. It should just be so. I feel like it should just be more straight to the point.
It really should.
But I
it
really I should. Got,
like, don't get me wrong.
End up writing like a novella.
Right. I mean, there's a lot of people who do that. And sometimes it's kind of cool. But at the same time, it's like, can you just fucking describe the image so I can go on to the, like, I don't know where I should skip text so I can go back to the story that I was reading before you decided to insert this image with a novella attached to it. And now I don't know if it's part of the story or not.
I wish there was a way you could. I mean, I guess you could do quotes when it's describing a thing versus when it's telling a story, and it would read out when there's quotes, correct? And so
we use readers.
And
what happens is you can set your reader. Generally, our readers will read everything on the page. So we have a couple of options in how we use them. I use the mouse over method, which means that I put my mouse over something and it'll read me like that paragraph, that, you know, text, or it'll go line by line depending on how I want to do, you know, go through a either a book or a PDF or whatever it is I'm reading.
Yeah.
But for other people, it goes like through columns, through paragraphs. If it's poorly structured, we have to suffer through everything on a page with no way of sorting through it. Like,
oh man.
Yeah, it's not as intuitive as people seem to think it is, especially because it has to be programmed that way.
We're so quick to assume just technology is amazing right when it comes out.
Right.
Like, we're
it is.
No possible way there's flaws with all
right.
that. Yeah.
It is. It's just that it takes. So here's a great example. There's so many PDFs out there, especially in the gaming industry, that Adobe has a reader, right?
Yep.
And most people think, oh, as long as it works with Adobe Reader, it's fine. That's accessibility. No. No, it's fucking not. At all.
No.
But I guess it's closer. But the other thing is, like, it's the software that we use for it is actually free. Anyone can download it, and you can figure out how to make all of your PDFs work correctly, but okay. But what happens is everything has to be coded correctly with your table of contents. Everything has to link up correctly. Mm-hmm. It has to have the right markers in order for it to be truly accessible.
Yeah.
So it ends up, it's a little bit more complicated than that, and it's not like it's the software's fault. It is the user or the people who just don't want to do it.
I do think in terms of documents, Adobe InDesign can help with that. Because there's a visual mode as well where you can see like the paragraph breaks and stuff. It'll have yes. all the marks, and you can arrange it like that. So it's like, it's at least more accurate. And maybe when you make an interactive PDF, I don't know enough about the coding and the alt text and stuff to actually have a certain answer, but like, I wonder if you make an interactive PDF, it'll kind of help with that coding process as well.
I'm not saying that, I'm not asking a question. There's nothing to answer. It's people who just don't want to do it.
That's true.
It's true. That's why, right. I said is it's not like the software isn't available or
yeah.
that the technology isn't there. It's, and again, I don't, like, when it comes to like the average person, I don't expect anybody to like do anything beyond Adobe Reader at all, because honestly, one, the blind community is such a small community, especially it is in reference to the gaming industry, but also people who are fully blind make only 2% of our community, of the entire blind community.
That's still a big number though.
Oh yeah, no, I mean, absolutely, but it's just the fact that when you look at accessibility needs, the amount of fully blind tabletop RPG gamers is really small, and it's one of the reasons why we're absolutely not catered to in any way, shape, or form. And so sometimes it's like, okay, listen, can we just make the bare minimum at least? Can we start there? Can we go with the Adobe Reader? Can we, like,
yeah,
all you have to do is like click a link, for fuck's sake, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it'll link your headers automatically, you know, but the problem is that it doesn't link in the paragraph itself. So you can't just pick up where you left off reading. You can't really search things well. Like, it has all sorts of problems that, I mean, honestly, I understand, but also at the same time, you can't claim accessibility if you're not going to make it a fully accessible PDF or book or whatever.
Yeah, for sure.
So I'm going on my own tangents.
No, you're fine. That helps me understand a lot more, for sure, as somebody who doesn't regularly deal with that. So I appreciate you explaining it to me much more and educating me on it, for sure. Because it definitely helps me in terms of when I'm making my own games, how I can find a way to make them accessible. Even like a thing like a card game, I try to figure out how to make that more accessible for people of different, of varying disabilities and stuff, right. And how you can make that. I
I'm curious about in a physical medium too, like how I can make that more accessible, because I don't know if I'll ever do a digital version, but maybe down the line if enough people are interested in it, do a digital version for sure.
Right.
But yeah, so it's definitely something to look into, and reach out to people and professionals about for sure.
Yeah. So I do want to specify, I am one person who has but my own experience. And yeah. Although I do talk to other people that are blind, because I am part of the community and my players are the first to point stuff out, I would absolutely recommend that if anybody wants to produce truly accessible stuff for gaming, that mm-hmm. you hire a consultant, because that is what they go to school for. That is what they have vast amount of experience in, and they usually are able to do it across multiple different sources that, you know, make it accessible for more than just blind people or deaf or whatever the case may be. That is their job. Please hire somebody who actually does that for a living, by the way, not just somebody who's like, oh, I'll make it accessible.
Yeah, an accessibility consultant for sure.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Definitely. Yeah, I think especially for games with like big systems and stuff like that, you should.
I think
for sure.
If you want to make something like, again, you know, I am working on a tarot card deck right now, and it has world building aspects about it, and I'm having a lot of fun creating it. And I want to, I brought it online to share with some other people that are hopefully going to be helping me do some of the art. And I realized it's not accessibility friendly. And I was like, you've got to fucking be kidding me. Now I'm like, do I just find other software?
Yeah.
Find another site. But I don't know how to program a PDF to make it work for a reader, because that's not what I do. I draw maps.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't expect everybody to know. And the fact that so many people look at somebody who is blind or deaf or whatever, like, we all know how to do this stuff. I'm like, why would we?
Yeah. No, it is wild when people just assume that, for sure. I think it's really cool, because you can find those resources if you need to, and if you look.
It's
definitely something I think people should look into and do if they're making their own games and systems and stuff.
Oh yeah, I actually next week I'll be having an episode, or recording an episode, I don't know when it'll be edited, with an accessibility consultant. And I am excited to talk about it, because it's something that I know of one other person who is, I only know one other person who creates in the gaming industry who's also blind. And I'm pretty sure we're the only two people anyone ever asked to discuss any of them. And I'm like, oh, that's such a narrow pool of experience.
Yeah. It's cool though, because it still can reach a larger audience that that aren't in that, because they could be like somebody like me who's trying to make games and they care about accessibility, and they want as many people as possible to have the same enjoyment.
Yeah, but that's just it. It's just me and like one other person. It's kind of like when somebody turns around and says that they support people, you know, black people in the gaming community, and it's like the only show that they can possibly think of that has a black cast is like Motherlands.
Mm-hmm.
Is the only one you can name? It's the same five people that everyone names, because they're the most popular, as opposed to like genuinely going out and finding other shows, podcasts, actual plays, everything else by people of color. It's like, oh no, I'm just gonna name the most popular ones because they're the ones I see.
I just meant in terms of you interviewing the person. I thought you were concerned with only two people being interested in listening to it. It's like,
oh, no,
there's a lot of people would be interested in listening to it. I was going to say there's a lot of people that would be very interested in listening to that for sure.
Because it supplies
very important information for people that need to get educated on these things.
Yes.
I think that
That's a really cool, that would be a really cool guest to listen to for sure.
Oh yeah, I'm super excited. Plus, you know, her and I get to talk a lot about, she has been asking me to do, possibly do consulting and stuff. And it's really cool. Hard for me to want to, because, one, I have, my experience is very unique, so to speak. Well, my life experience with being partially blind is unique, not me being partially blind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a whole long, really weird, convoluted story that I won't go into right now, but it makes my experience with being partially blind just an oddity to begin with. So there's a lot of times when I talk to other people who are partially blind where I'm like, wow, we don't share that. So I always feel like maybe consulting wouldn't be a good idea, but I guess technically we're looking at the end result, and it is something I'm very passionate about, but I have no free time, so I don't know what I'm thinking I'm going to do, but.
But you still supply perspective. You know what I mean? Yes. So it's like in that, that's also important too. It's like, you may not feel like you are worthy of being a consultant for maybe the broad spectrum of it.
I just don't think I'm a good enough representation of the the experience that most other blind people have, because all of us are unique, just like everyone else. You know, there's nuances to everything, but I think the difference being that, so my blindness is, I'm partially blind. Well, not partially blind. I am blind in one eye, and I was born this way, so I don't have any trauma or anything else. So I make jokes about it. I'm really, really comfortable talking about it. It's, you know, but I lack depth perception because of it. I live in a two-dimensional world. I don't know what three-dimensional looks like, which makes my art very interesting, because everyone else tells me they see it in three, you know, it's very three-dimensional. It's like, that's great, but really it's just an optical illusion that I created, because everybody really, really responds when I pay a lot of attention to shading and where shadows and color go.
Yeah.
But it's not because I see three dimension.
that's so interesting. Like, yeah, that's an interesting way to interpret information and use of light and stuff in a way that conveys a similar message to people that do see in three dimensions. That's cool. That's a cool way to utilize that for sure.
It just wasn't my intention. I was just trying to respond to an art teacher going, I said, draw what you see. And I went, I did. And realizing that the only time that I got like a really good response to anything is when I paid a lot of attention to lighting, and I utilize a lot of negative space in my art. So,
yeah.
And that actually plays a tremendous key when I'm doing just monotone black and white stuff. So,
Wow.
But yeah. But the other thing is like, it's there's a lot of things that blind people do to navigate the world around us, and this was just one of them. The other thing is that we have a lot of stuff that we gotta combat, which is why when somebody sees me with my blind cane and then comes over and sees that I'm on my phone and acts like they had a aha moment that they caught
you
lying. I have people like what walk assholes. Right up to me. Oh, you don't know.
You're right, I don't. Absolutely right, I don't.
My wife had to get used to the fact that people will walk up to me and shove their hand in my face to see if I flinch.
That's so fucked up.
Complete strangers in a restaurant, just waiting for a table.
You headbutt them.
Oh, yeah. I will just slowly pick my hand up, make a weird face, and wave at them.
High five them.
Yeah. I've done weird stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
Because I just respond like that, but it took my wife a lot to get used to. Oh,
it's like wildly, boldly ignorant. You know what I mean? Like it's
so common. It's not unless a huge portion of the population is that ignorant.
Right, but I also think though, right? Why do they need to check? You know what I mean? Like why do they care? And why do they need to check?
Like, I can't speak, obviously, for... Right. I can't relate to it, but whenever I saw stuff like that happen, I just always think to myself, like, why do you care? Why does anyone care? Like, they should just leave you be. Like, whatever. Like, it's just... Let you live your life. Like, I don't understand, like, why it's so important to them that they need to validate that information for themselves. Like, it's so dumb.
And it's not for them. Or at least in their head, it's not. The reason that most people do this is because they genuinely believe that somebody else is faking an injury or a disability in order to maybe get benefits or to get, you know, get an easier way through society or whatever. And they feel that if they can prove that you are not disabled, then they're being a hero, you know, for the disabled people in, like, stopping other people from stealing their benefits or, you know.
They're looking for that Scooby-Doo moment where they, like, pull the mask off the guy and it's the janitor or whatever.
Yes.
You would have got away with it, too, if it wasn't for that pesky person that wouldn't mind their own business.
Right.
Yeah.
And the thing is, like, it is so commonplace that we have doctors do it. We do it within our own community. Yeah. Like, there's, at one point, it was, you know, you had to, like, quantify how blind you were, you know, and it's fucking ridiculous. The amount of people that absolutely feed into the disability narrative where we need heroes or we need whatever, or, you know, we don't need a champion, you know, that's some ableist shit right there.
Yeah.
If we need a champion, they'll be blind.
Yeah. and if you need help, you'd ask for it.
Exactly.
Like it's like, I don't know. It's wild to me that it's wild to me that everyone assumes that somebody needs help or is considered like less than or in need of help because they may have something different than somebody else. Like it's, I don't know. It's just, it's weird to think that way, I guess. I don't know. I just, people, it bothers me.
With a lot of people, it is the fact that they can't imagine what it would be like to be blind or whatever disability they're seeing in someone else. And I get this a lot, and I understand, because, like, for the most part, I will have people like, oh, you know, is this a sensitive topic? Can we not talk about it? And I was like, are you fucking kidding me? I talk about me being blind and make jokes all the time. Like, I was born this way, so it's not a traumatic experience. I can't miss something I've never had. Mm-hmm. But I think the thing that, like, blows people's minds is, like, when they talk about like the ability to like cure it or fix it, I was like, I wouldn't want to. Like,
yeah,
you know, and the biggest reason is one, because it made me, you know, it's like every other experience I've had in my life and it made me who I am. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is like, I don't know. I've never been able to see out of that eye. So it's not something that's clearly, I don't require it to live or be happy. So
yeah,
who fucking cares? You know, it's for like, sure. Well, wouldn't you want to see in 3D? And I was like, I don't know. And I still don't care. Like it's, I don't need to be perfect. And I really just kind of like the way things are, you know?
Yeah. If you're happy, then you're happy. It's like, whatever, right. Who cares?
But there's so many people out there who can't imagine.
Feel like they need to fix that or something.
Well, it's not necessarily that they need to fix it, but they can't imagine losing their sight and not wanting to fix it. Or they can't imagine losing their sight, full stop, you know? Like, and it's terrifying for a lot of people. And if you were sighted before and you lose sight, it's a very traumatic experience. Mm-hmm. And it's not like you're just gonna immediately like, oh well, I'm blind, time to move on. Like there's a lot of adjusting, you know. But for people like me who, and again, there may be people who are born blind or partially blind and do want to fix it or do want to whatever, and that's great. Like there's no right or wrong way to be blind.
Yeah.
you know, but the fact that there's so many people that want to, that don't know how to have the discussion. And that's, again, one of the reasons why I want to bring on the consultant, because learning to be okay with, like, just asking the question, is this okay to talk about? Like, are you, you know, I had somebody the other day say something about, you know, seeing, and they're like, oh, I'm sorry, is that okay? And I'm like, saying the word seeing? Yeah. You know, like, what a weird fucking thing that, but all right, sure.
But I do think it comes back to, people are too worried that if they say the wrong thing, that, like, it'll make things awkward. Like,
right, but the thing is, like,
it's like, you're allowed to make mistakes and, like, be like, and as long as you're willing to learn from them,
right?
Like, that's okay. Like, you're taking you're taking that initial step, and, like, I think it's okay to, like, because of course people are gonna make mistakes on certain things, because we can't have all the experiences all the time. So it's like, we're obviously gonna make mistakes because there's things that we can't relate to, or things that we don't know about, or things that we're learning about.
Right.
But if you just have to be willing to be humbled a bit. And I think that's okay. I think it's okay to, like, make mistakes and want to learn from them.
I think it's important to learn how to have a conversation with something that you think someone else would be upset with.
Yeah.
Like, I feel that the amount of people that will come up to me and, like, oh my God, you know, you're partially blind, I appreciate your work even more. Don't say that. That makes it sound like, just because I'm blind, it's amazing, it's a miracle I can create art.
Yeah.
I just had to learn to make it differently than the rest of the world. That's all. Like, I still had to practice. I still had to do the same thing every other artist does, which is constantly practice, constantly create. Like, you just learn different ways.
Well, it's like what we talked about before we start recording, about when we talked about AI. It's like, it takes away the intention, too.
Yeah.
Like, your intention wasn't to, like, make these maps just because of the thing of your disability. Like, you were making maps because you had a passion to make maps.
Right.
And this is how they look, and that's really cool. Mm-hmm. And that's it. Right. Like, and
I would like to stress, I don't have a disability in reference to me being blind. I have a blindness.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
and it's okay. I don't get offended. I just correct people.
For sure.
Because so in terms of, I don't see it as a disability. I do have a disability, but it's not me being blind.
Okay. Good to know. So, In terms of your blindness, if I may correct myself, it doesn't like define your art. Like, your art is defined by your technique, what you do and how you do it, and your intention behind that. So it's like, it's really, I can see why that would be frustrating when somebody would, like, try to slap that definition on it.
Oh yeah. And they're like, do you think you're a better artist because you're partially blind? And I'm like, oh, that would sound great, except for the fact that there's so many people that are fully sighted who do the same exact thing I do, who use negative space, or have, you know, huge works, you know, dealing specifically with focusing on lighting and mm-hmm. color and everything else. I didn't invent it, so no.
Yeah.
You know what it did? It made me really dislike the average person while walking down the street, is what it did.
I want to apologize on behalf of quote unquote average people.
Oh, please don't. Like, it's almost hilarious how much people play chicken with your cane, which is always interesting. God. Well, because they get so focused on realizing that they're seeing a blind person. There's a blind person in front of them.
Yeah.
Or at least they hope, you know, they think it is, you know, because they have to have that aha moment. But it's either that, or they end up so entranced by the fact that I'm using a cane, because I don't use a cane like how you see in movies. There's a lot of us who don't use a tapping method or have a marshmallow tip. I actually have a roller at the end of mine, and I roll it back and forth because it tells me the terrain a lot better. And because I lack depth perception, I'm just looking for things that will trip me, you know? But I end up with, like, they get so entranced by this that they will just walk directly towards it. And it's hilarious. As always, our show is sponsored by Legend Keeper, a fantastic world-building tool, whether you're a writer, a GM, DM, or even a player. You can create a world, you can add all of your notes, you can determine who gets to see them, edit them, create their own. And if you own a project, you are the only person who has to have a subscription, so you can bring your players in for free, or your readers, or your patrons. You can determine who can edit, who can see, who can view secrets. And there are so many really interesting tools on Legend Keeper that allow you to link pages, maps, images, sidebars, timelines, calendars, like, you name it. There is so much about Legend Keeper that is so simple and yet incredibly effective.
So after you did the gallery stuff,
yep,
you then transitioned, is that when you started transitioning to doing the prop stuff for fun, or did you?
No, it's kind of everything all at once.
I feel like I'm interviewing you now. I'm sorry.
I know, right? No, it's fine. Nobody else does. So might as well. No,
I'm just curious.
No, that's okay. I mean, it's a conversation. It's not meant to be
for sure. Interview. For sure.
No, true. I have a lot of friends that were in theater when we were all in high school, but I wasn't. So I always make the joke that I'm theater kid adjacent.
Okay.
And because my friends were in local theaters and stuff like that, and I, I'm a huge D&D nerd, and, you know,
lurking
was a
in the shadows.
Well, I LARPed. Props. Right. Yeah. So I made props for LARPing, and, you know, armor and weaponry and or buffs. So I made all this stuff, and one of my friends was having a play or whatever, and they were talking about the things that they needed. And I was like, oh, I have something like that. And like, it was like a big grimoire looking book. I was like, I have one, you know? And that just kind of like started me. And it was just something I did every once in a while and for fun. And it wasn't until I started doing maps that, so I do pyrography, which is basically wood burning.
Okay.
And
I never heard pyrography. I never heard that word. I learned something new today. Pyrography.
There you go. Pyrography. Yeah. It's fire writing, which I just thought was really, it's so metal.
like pyre. Yeah. I love that. Yeah. I love that.
So, I ended up learning to, do that on leather.
Whoa, sick.
So I was making leather maps, but you have to do this in a nice wide open space and well ventilated, because it smells horrible and it's just not something you want to inhale. And leather doesn't last nearly as long as paper, and trying to help, you know, teach people how to take care of their leather maps over time. And it ended up like this big, huge thing that sometimes I love, you know, I'm like, oh man, I really want to go make a leather map. But most of the time I don't. So I transitioned over to paper, and because I already made props and stuff like that, I started doing all the aged paper and everything else. So
I love how old school it sounds, like you're from an ancient time. We transitioned over to paper.
Yes. Right. Well, I mean,
like paper was invented. You're like,
I mean, I'm that old.
No, you're not old. That's not what I'm saying at all. What I'm saying is, like,
I've never heard of old is a privilege.
It's amazing, but wasn't what I was insinuating.
I know. I'm saying I wouldn't be offended if you were, is what I'm saying.
I just think it's funny because making maps on leather, it sounds so, like, archaic. And then when you were like, we transitioned over to paper, it sounds like it was just invented. And it, like when the computer was invented, they like wheel in that Mac 1 or whatever. And you're like, what is this?
No. First off, you get wheeled to our original computers because they were the size of a room.
That's true. They were very big.
They were huge. And the funny thing is that I, like I said, I'm a former efficiency manager. So when computers started becoming a thing in companies, I had to take training in them. And it was hilarious because we literally had tapes, like video, like cassette tapes, cassette tapes that we recorded information on that they had to be changed out every day, you know, or every few hours, depending on the company. And the computers were the size of like a wall. They were like easily 6 feet wide, depending on some of the companies. It's just hilarious. And they had cooled rooms and shit.
I remember I was a little further on in the tech than that, but not too much farther. Like we were, when I was in high school, we were doing, we had like the Mac, like the ones that had like the clear colors. I think they were like Mac 3s or whatever the hell they were called. Right. And we had like zip drives.
Yep.
And like by the time I was a senior, they started doing flash drives or whatever. And it was just really weird to see that transition from something so like what I thought was compact, because we also had floppy disks.
Right.
To something that's even more compact. And you're like, wait, you can do this? Like that in itself was mind blowing. To like then you see like now they just like throw these things at you.
They
don't know what to do with them. They have too many of them now, and now they just are around everywhere, and they're so cheap to get.
Oh yeah, it's hilarious because you know, edge of technology. You have a 10 megabyte drive.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like wow.
It's hard to think of like. I look at the file size of like a lot of these files I have now, and I'm like, there's no possible way I could have made it work.
No.
I guess files might have been smaller back then because they were limited, but like, it's just like you can't store that information on any of these things. These files are so huge now. But yeah, I think a poster I do ends up being like close to a gig before I like
merge it all down. It's just a gig.
Yeah. Why are yours much bigger than that? Like that's what I'm curious about. Like me being a designer, like from like learning how to like condense stuff and save file space and stuff. When I hear a gig, I'm like, that is a massive file. If you're working in print, like, well, why? Like nothing should be that big. But I mean, it happens. Obviously, like there's a lot of print files that end up being that big. But like, there's ways to manipulate. DPI and stuff to like help with your file compression. You can save as Photoshop big files instead of Photoshop files, and that'll save on readability and whatever.
Right.
So I'm so curious how large do the files that you make get?
Probably an average of 20 to 30 gig.
What are you doing? What DPI are you doing it at? Like 900? 300
is the standard.
How big are these maps?
36 inches.
Oh, okay. How do you get to that many gigs? Now the design brain in me is like, how? I'm like that meme where the lady's like thinking and all the calculations are spinning in front of her. I'm like trying to like how are you getting to 30 gigs? Is like every mountain on its own layer? Like does this?
So all of the features are on their own layer. So like I have one that just has water features, one has coast lines, you know, but they have to be separate from their color layers.
Okay. Yeah. That makes sense.
So everything is doubled and they're just huge files.
Yeah. Working at 300 DPI and doubling every layer at 36 inches.
Yeah.
Well, yeah,
they have to be able to print blankets with these maps, you know?
True. Yeah. I mean, when I was, when I worked as a designer at a place, I had to do wall murals a lot.
Oh, God.
And they were like, and I learned the hard way that they were like, no, and billboards and stuff.
Yeah.
They would be like, no, don't make the file 300 DPI. And they're like, I'm like, why? They're like, that your computer will crash. Like, just don't do it. They were like 25 DPI. I'm like, what? Because you're working on like a 10-foot thing. Yeah. And they're like, if you just make the document the right size that you need it for versus, but I mean, in your instance, it's different because you're making different sizes for different things.
Yes.
But like, I think 300 DPI is a pretty good, I honestly, if
If I'm drawing one for myself, yeah. I will maybe make it in 150 or 72 DPI.
Like yeah,
if I'm doing it just knowing that it's going to be for like virtual tabletop, I create it in 72 DPI.
Yeah.
But 300 is the standard that I'm asked for, so I don't even get a choice.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's usually the standard that everyone asks for, yeah.
Yeah.
And I always am like, I always want to be like, but you could manipulate, like, but I don't. I just am like, okay, sure. I'll keep the layers to a minimum.
We had so many conversations in reference to really not understanding, especially in this industry, because this isn't necessarily true in other industries that I've done art for. In the gaming industry, or the tabletop industry specifically, because I don't know about video games and stuff. The amount of really odd requests that I get is just mind-blowing to me.
Yeah.
So why you would need a file or a map of something that you're going to have at the back of a book to be 300 in actual size, 300 DPI, is just why. You don't print at 300 DPI.
Yeah, I mean, even if you print at 300 DPI, like, the book's not, like,
right.
I don't know. I feel like if, because you could do something like, say they ask for, like, I don't know, let's say 24 by 36 map.
And, right, which
and,
they don't.
But then they're going to put, well, they're going to, the dimensions are that, then they're going to put it in a book, right?
Right.
You can just shrink it down. You can reduce it to, you can either shrink down the size or you can shrink the DPI in half and then shrink down the size or whatever. You can, there's ways to condense the file down. And I just think it's interesting that they ask for those. It's like they heard 300 DPI is like,
right,
good. And then they're like, ah, that must be for everything. It's like, no, right.
I would understand if they used it for different things, but they don't.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, no, like if they were like, "Oh no, we need it this because we are going to print blankets."
You're going to sell prints, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it's just really interesting, like messing around with all that stuff. Yeah.
Critical Role, I always do this stuff in 300 DPI, so they can print prints on anything they want.
Yeah, because they did blankets out of one of the maps, right? Was it Tal'Dorei?
Two of them,
both of them. Okay, yeah. Cool.
Yeah,
yeah. Those maps are rad.
Thank you.
You did a great job on those. Those are killer.
Thank you.
I love cartography in general. I always think there's so many really great like artists out there that do really cool maps. Like yourself, I really love Marco's maps. I love Francesca Barold. If I'm saying her name right, I hope I am. She makes really beautiful maps as well. She did ones for like Octopath Traveler and stuff are really cool. They're just stunning. I just think there's so many cool cartographers out there, and like I as someone who's learning to do map making, I'm just always in such awe by everyone's. I mean, I'm not doing it. I'm not trying to do it for anything except for like my own thing, but it's like, it's just really cool to see, especially when people give little glimpses into their process and stuff for it. It's really sick.
Right.
It's really an impressive thing people do with cartography.
Well, that's one of the reasons I made the cartography course I did on Patreon. Cause when I first,
shout out.
devinrue.com, you know, I'm sorry, patreon.com/devinrue. There we go. I'll get there eventually. Matt Mercer did the same thing to me during my conversation with him. He plugged me and I was like, oh, I don't do that. And he's like, I'm trying.
Why?
Like, I don't know. I'm so bad at that. And he knows I'm bad at it. And that was just why he did it. But it was funny.
That's like a niche that I love in podcasts is when they jokingly advertise themselves. Like, right. I think I always find that really funny. Like there's one that I listen to. They always like somehow weirdly segue into their Patreon. And it's just always a funny bit to me, and it aggravates like half their audience. And I'm just like, I like it even more for some reason.
Yeah. If I was doing this to promote myself, it would be different, but I actually want to do this to promote other people.
Yeah, for sure. No, and that's really cool. Yeah.
I'm just doing this so I can just talk to a bunch of people that I otherwise wouldn't be able to have conversations with, because who schedules time to hang out with friends?
I know, it's hard enough to schedule a D&D every week with a group.
Right.
It's I felt bad. I had to cancel this week. I was like, I'm not feeling good, guys, and I really want to sleep past 3 a.m. And they were like, that's fine. But I just feel bad every time I have to cancel the session. And then of course my wife goes to be more on it.
So it's awesome.
Yeah. I wish I would be like, you guys run the game. Right. And then I want to but I still want to listen in to see the chaos ensue.
Oh, see, so we do a lot of text-based.
Okay.
I don't want to say because we don't really do a ton of combat anyhow, but we do a lot of text-based role-playing. So we have our own Discord server, and certain channels are RP only, so we know that if it's in there that it's actual dialogue that our characters have had. This also allows me to play a character, so I'm not just stuck as a forever DM with no time to play. I know.
I weep.
But the great thing is like, my favorite part about it is, even when we are playing, if they want an RP moment that their word will slow down the pace of the game, they just make a note and we'll have that conversation later on during the week when we're not actually in session. So their characters their characters get tons more bonding time, and they get to actually have real-time conversations about puzzles or things that they want to do in reference to whatever is going on with our story. So it's so much easier, and there have been times where I'm not present for games and they can go on.
I love that idea. I love that, like a little log kind of thing. That's pretty sick.
Yeah,
so we talked about your history a little bit. We talked about your I wish I had nearly as interesting a history as that with my career. I started as a graphic designer, I think I mentioned before.
Yep.
I did a bunch of pop culture shirts and stuff like that, just to kind of get in the art spheres, I guess, as a career option. I started doing that a bunch, those daily sites that you see a lot, like T-Fury and stuff like that. I did a bunch of those for a few years.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of transitioned out of that into more just doing fantasy art when I started trying to come up with my own game and stuff. I went to I was at a PAX one year and I saw Dungeons and Dragons, 5e, the art and stuff, and Magic the Gathering and stuff all kind of inspired me to be I want to learn. I want to do this. So this is the stuff that I want to this is the inspiring stuff. So which I'm pretty sure, everyone has that story, but I definitely wanted to pursue that. And I did a playtest of a game there, and it made me really want to get into game creating and stuff like that, and making systems. So I started kind of learning how to digitally paint around 2014-ish.
Mm-hmm.
I started learning then, doing studies and stuff and learning that way in Photoshop and I did that for a while I still did the pop culture shirt stuff, and I worked in retail for years while I was doing all that. There was one time I ended up working three jobs. I was doing the freelance stuff. I was working at a CVS, and then I also on Sundays I worked a double shift as a dishwasher, and kind of threw all that and did art at the same time with that.
I spent a summer as a chef.
Cool. God, you just have all these interesting you got. I'm over here talking about making weird t-shirts. That's really cool. I cook. No, but that's it. That's all I got. So I gradually turned into doing fantasy art. Once I kind of built enough confidence in doing it, sometime around 2016-ish, I started kind of being okay, maybe I'll do work for companies and stuff. So I started submitting my portfolio out, and like, I didn't really get any bites for a while. It took a while to get the groove going.
Mm-hmm.
Like 2019, 2018, I would say 2018. Cause 2018, I started really getting the work and was picking up and stuff. And that's when I kind of, left my graphic design job to take care of my kid full time while doing the freelance stuff. And I just kind of dove into it
headlong.
Because at the time I was trying to balance that and working full time as a designer, a graphic designer, and being a good dad as best I could be at the same time. And it was just way too stressful to try to manage it. So I was kind of left with the choice of like, do I quit the freelance stuff or do I quit the job that had all the security and the healthcare and all that stuff? And I was like, I'll make a bad decision and quit the job with all the security.
I can tell you that as an efficiency manager and all the numbers and stuff that we run, that technically you have more job security working for yourself than you do another company.
I wholeheartedly agree with that, because that company that I worked for, I won't name names, but like the company I worked for, because technically I still work for them a little bit as a contractor. I do mm-hmm. design work for them still, because they didn't, I don't think they wanted to hire another designer. Right. So I was like, I'll still do stuff, but I'm going to work from home. Right. And they did a tons of layoffs all the time. It was just like every single time it would happen, it was like so scary, because you'd just be like, because we took not like a gamble, but like we you know, like established our life here. And like every time that stuff happens, it's like you just panic, you know, you're just like,
yeah.
Oh my gosh, what's going to happen to all these things that you care about? And it's terrifying. And especially I feel so awful for all the people that are going through all the layoffs and stuff now in the games industry. It's like, you're just like, God, that sucks. That is, it's hard to go through all that. And especially when you invested all your time, resources, some people moved states, countries, it's rough when that shit happens, especially when you're like, when you're just unknowingly that happens too. It just like comes out of nowhere. I essentially approached them and I was like, listen, I can't do this anymore. Like I'm gonna leave. And then I kind of gave them an idea of like, I can still do contract work for you, blah, blah, blah. Cause I know hiring people right now is not really a thing you guys are doing. Mm-hmm. So I kind of offered to do contract work for them, and that's been kind of going on ever since, at a very small level, especially as I get more and more work as a freelancer. It's kind of whenever they need a thing, I'll be like, oh, I think I can do it. And I kind of squeeze it in here and there. But so I've been full time freelance since like 2018, and I've been doing, you know, stuff for, like we mentioned at the beginning, I've been doing stuff for TTRPGs and shows and stuff, and I'm really grateful for the opportunities that I did get. You know, doing character art for Children of Erte has been really fun. Adam at Demiplane is super cool, and he's a really kind dude, and it's been a blast working with them. And the people at D4, Devin and Dustin, are awesome. And
they've been on here.
I listened to that episode. That was the episode I couldn't remember.
That's bad.
Not that I couldn't remember it, like, because it was forgetful. It's just I was like, right. I listened to another one, and what one did I listen to? And I was like, and I couldn't, like, there's like on the tip of my tongue. Yes, I listened to their episode. Their episode was really good. Yeah. They're great folks for sure. I was just grateful that people, you know, took a chance on me and you know, let me make art for them, here we are. That's kind of it. I gave you a real brief, hopefully brief, history of where I'm at. It's not as crazy. I'm not making maps on leather, but you know, where I did start. My first commission was I drew someone's dog as a bard. That was
there.
Pretty
you
fun.
Go.
That was there. That was my favorite. That was one of my favorite commissions. It was a blast.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that's kind of, yeah, it's kind of what we do is like, I do a lot of character stuff for people. People seem to like my character pieces. So I tend to do that a lot.
I should not mention what I did then as my first commission.
Oh, please. I need to hear now because it's probably going to be not only more ridiculous, but also probably worse, which would make it better. Go ahead. Let me hear.
it's just my first commission was to, make a map of Faerun on leather for Ed Greenwood.
Oh, come on.
I'm serious.
Oh, man. How did you get that one, if you don't mind me asking?
I made a map of Faerun on leather for myself. And then okay. I one of his friends was like, oh, my God. Well, the funny thing is, this person out of the blue was like, hey, can you make a map of Faerun for Ed Greenwood? And I was like, yeah, sure, Ed Greenwood, wink, wink, you know?
Yeah.
I'm like, okay. Cause
I'm totally Ed Greenwood.
Right. Because already at this point, I was like, yeah, no, I can't make them and sell them. It's copyrighted, blah, 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 you know?
Yeah.
So, sure, it's Ed Greenwood. And I actually was going to make one for a friend anyhow, so I was like, I'm going to make one, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
When it comes time to actually tell me where to send this and, you know, type of thing, or proof, because I was going to ask for it. And so I get done making the map and I was like, okay, and I'm sending this where? And he's like, can I get like some sort of like NDA or like something from you to like make ensure that you're not going to give his information out? And I was like,
like your social security number.
Right. I was like, this is legitimate, you know? And so he gave me Ed Greenwood's address to send him a map.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah, that's awesome. So, that's a cool that's a cool first commission. See,
yeah,
man, that, that's rad.
I am not trying to one up you, by the way. I just thought it was funny.
I mean, it's hard to one up doing a dog bard. So I don't think you are trying to one up me.
No, no, not at all.
I'm saying this with my pinky out because I am a class act. But yes, no, that's really cool though. Like, yeah. that's a cool. So And is that kind of similar to how you ended up working with Critical Role? Like, they saw like your maps that you made of Tal'Dorei, and like they were like, "Hey, can you make more of these?" Or like, was it a different avenue? Like, how did that happen? If you don't mind me asking that as well.
I don't mind at all. I was already making maps and was getting my name out there, and made a video of me drawing one of them, and Will Wheaton shared it on Twitter, and I immediately got a bunch of people that followed me, one of which was Chris Perkins.
Okay.
And shortly thereafter, Matt Mercer. And I was like, all right, you know, making my name out there, you know, type of thing. And then the end of campaign one came, and Taliesin, you know, as Percy was like, you know, I'm going to hire all of the, you know, local artisans to commemorate, you know, the journey of Vox Machina. So I put together, because I make in-world prop maps, I made an in-world prop map to commemorate Vox Machina. And I was, you know, I was making videos of me drawing this on paper and then coloring it and everything else. And someone tagged, I don't remember if they tagged him or not, actually. But Matt saw me shading each individual tree and was like, what is the matter with you, type of thing? And I was like, you weren't supposed to see this yet. This is, I'm making a map of Tal'Dorei. He's like, what? So I was like, yeah, wow. So I'm making fan art because it's the only fan art I could do.
Yeah.
Because I don't draw portraits. I mean, I can, but they take me forever to do. So I made it. And then I was like, hey, how do I mean, can I get this to you? Do I go with, like, the normal channels and everything else? And he's like, you could. And I was like, all right. And he's like, or I could just give you, you know, a different address. And I was like, sweet, you know.
Yeah.
And
that's so cool.
Yeah. And I was like, hey, you know, if you ever need a map or anything, you know, a cartographer. And he's like, well, we are starting campaign two.
Okay.
And I was like, you're fucking with me. Don't fuck with me. Like, you don't understand, man. Don't toy with my emotions here.
Yeah.
You know, and that was it.
Yeah, that's sick.
Yeah, so I rushed to get it done and get it to him and everything else, and then it ended up being presented on my birthday.
Oh, that's cool. That's
2018,
a cool.
Yeah. So
yeah, it's cool to get like that recognition and that the credit and stuff too. Like it sometimes, like, I mean, obviously, just getting the work in general rules. But I think I always feel like just like kind of seeing people's appreciation for it is always better too. Like I remember seeing somebody sharing a picture of just my Jester fan art, like in their opening reel, like at like Comic Con or whatever.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's rad. I was like, that's pretty cool to see, like. You know, and also just seeing it in the wild, like not like somebody I know sharing it with me or like whatever. I was like, that's pretty cool. So like, yeah, it always feels like cool to see and appreciate it. Or like when like one of the cast members retweeted or talk about it, or and like yeah, like Chris Rogans follows me too. I don't know why, but he does.
He made great art.
I'm like, there you go. I'm like, he must have saw that dog Bard.
I mean, like,
one of these days.
You know,
I'll commission him to make a dog.
He's really big about his dog.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah, so maybe that was it. Maybe that's what did it.
Yeah, maybe you should draw his dog as a bard.
I should
whatever.
Mail it to him.
Yeah.
Who this knows? Is your dog as a bard.
Right? I mean, you know. And it's funny, though. But, I mean, Matt already followed my stuff beforehand. It was just a wonderful conversation and it was great because normally when I do commissions for people, I never get to see like their players' reactions.
Yeah.
So when I got to see the cast react to the first map, well, actually every map ever since then, because I just die every time. I was full on crying because
it's so cool. It's so cool every time they react to it.
I'm a huge fan of the story more than anything else. And to know that, my vision of the world is canon, you know, is just mind-blowing to me.
Yeah, for sure. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so. Like it you have a slice of their world lore.
Well,
you're in.
A lot more than a slice. Yeah. No, I
Oh yeah,
I,
yeah, a lot more
I
than
do
a slice.
Help with,
I should mean
I
like
do
in terms
things.
Of yeah, the in terms of the lore in general, you are
Oh yeah.
In there. And it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. The first map we did, I don't think I said a word about anything. I was just because we were so crammed for time to get it. Now that when I get stuff from Matt, I'm like, okay, by the way, we should do this. Or now I get to line up the stuff that we already have to make sure things sort of fit.
Yeah.
Although it is hilarious when the internet tries to do it, not realize that the maps are drawn at different scales. And you can't just like... scale one image to fit the other one to somehow make it. That's not how that works, but it's really cute.
I do love that they have the physical maps on the show though, because like I do love when they bust it out and they start like looking at it and stuff. It's really cool to see like them being so immersed in like actually using a map to like look for where they're going, and so I always find that really fun. That's like always like some of my favorite moments in it.
Yeah,
especially seeing Travis trying to figure out. Like, he's so, like, into it. It's so cool.
He did a great little thing on Four-Sided Dive where he's talking about why he, you know, because someone asked him about the maps. He just went on this wonderful little tangent. I clipped it because I had to.
Oh, it's so cool.
Yeah, and he's just like, oh, because there are all these different textures and these different things, and I know that Matt is hiding things in the mat. And, you know, and of course I immediately get someone like, is he? And I'm like, I'm not going to tell you even if he was.
I'm guilty of being a little behind on Campaign 3. It was so good, but I just got, you know, bogged down with work
life
and stuff. I just lost track of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I really loved what I listened to. I think I got to like episode like I want to say it was like 50.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get to that point with Critical Role. It's like you miss a few and you're like, I'll get caught up. And then
you never do
because you miss like 8 and you're like, that's like 16. That's like
why Danny
24 hours of work.
Danny Carr's wonderful little summary of what happens she is does fantastic really good work, to use for sure. if She's you insane, miss several sure. episodes. Like, it's, oh, yeah. they're so great.
No, I think I will do that. I do read her recaps a lot, especially mm-hmm. if I miss, like, I usually do it if I miss, like, one episode. Mm-hmm. Like, just kind of, like, get, like, a quick, like, okay, where are we? And if I feel like I miss a chunk, if I feel like I miss something really important, I was like, okay, I'll wait and I'll watch this and then I'll go back.
Yeah, I do the same thing. Like, I'll read it if I'm incidentally, which is very rare that I miss one. Yeah. But if I do, I'll read it like, oh, should I watch this one? Okay. Yeah. I don't, you know, like, whatever happened, great. Yeah. You know, I know whether or not I should watch the episode or wait to catch up. So.
Yeah. No, I just think, in an ideal world, I'd be doing this, you know, forever. So let's hope.
Great.
We're just doing this. I love doing this stuff. I love making art and connecting with other artists that do it and talking with these people that work on all these really cool shows and all the hard work they do and stuff. It's really awesome to see them do it and have it all come together.
I can't wait till I start having some of the DMs and stuff. I mean, other than Matt, because obviously I've had him on the podcast.
Yeah. But
I want to talk to, like, Mark Humes. I want, so many. I would love to have Brennan on here too. Brea. Like, I just want to talk about creating stuff and just listen to them ramble.
Yeah.
I just want to be at the cool kids table.
Yeah, no, I would like just sit back and like listen to them rant.
Yep. It's really hard to coordinate schedules, but I have started reaching out. I'm just trying to get through a lot of the artists and stuff now.
For sure.
Mostly because we are the biggest thing that, you know, the most, the occupation most people go for is some sort of writer or developer or artist. So those are the people that I'm having on here now. And when I can, like, possibly convince one of them to, like, break from their incredibly busy schedules to, I don't know, just come be on a podcast that five people listen to, you know, I will.
I'm sure more than five people listen to it.
Maybe six.
Hey, well, there you go. We'll see six.
Yeah.
Now I can market myself. Patreon.com/... No, I'm just kidding.
No, absolutely. You can tell everyone how to find you. I'm going to have all the links in the description anyhow.
Okay. Yeah. I was going to save it for when we wrap up. If we're wrapping up, I can
I just cut the podcast off at whenever I feel like it's a good beat.